Epilogue 2. For once the seas were calm on the beach below, and with the tide out, many of the Imas had ventured on to the flats to collect shellfish. Off to one side, the twins played with Absi, and the sound of the boy's laughter reached up to the shelf of stone where sat Udinas. He heard footsteps coming down the trail nearby and turned to see Onos and Hetan. They were carrying reed baskets to join in the harvest. Udinas saw Onos pause, look out towards the children.
"Relax, Onos," Udinas said. "I'll keep an eye on them."
The warrior smiled. Hetan took his hand to lead him down. Reclined on a high shelf of limestone above Udinas, Riad said,
"Stop worrying, father. It'll wear you out."
From one of the caves higher up the climb behind them, there drifted out the sound of a crying baby.
"Poor Seren. That's one cranky baby she has there."
"We're safe," Riad said. "And if some damned mob of vicious humans shows up, well, they'll have Kelava, Onrak, Onos Tulan, and me to deal with."
"I know," Udinas replied.
He rubbed and massaged his hands. The aches were coming back. Maybe it was time to try that foul medicine Lera Epar kept offering him.
"Ah, it's just years of cold water. Sinks in, that's all."
Glancing over, he grunted to his feet.
"Father?"
"It's all right," he said. "The twins have buried Absi up to his neck. Those girls need a good whipping."
"You've never whipped a child in your life."
"How would you know? Well, maybe I haven't, but the threat still works."
Riad sat up, looked down on Udinas with his young, sun-darkened face. Squinting, Udinas said,
"In the bright sun, I see your mother in your smile."
"She smiled?"
"Once, I think. But I won't take credit for it."
Udinas set off down to the beach. Absi had clambered free and tackled one of the girls and was now tickling her into a helpless state. Trouble passed, but he continued anyway. Out in the sea beyond the small bay, whales broached the surface, sending geysers into the air, announcing the coming of summer. The rider paused on the road, glancing down at the untended turnips growing wild in the ditch, and after a moment he kicked his horse onward. The sun was warm on his face as he rode west along Itko Khan's coastal track. In his wake, in the lengthening shadows, two figures took form. Moments later, huge hounds appeared. One bent to sniff at the turnips and then turned away. The figure with the cane sighed.
"Satisfied?"
The other one nodded.
"And you imagine only the best now, don't you?"
"I see no reason why not."
Shadow Throne snorted.
"You wouldn't."
Cotillion glanced over at him.
"Why not, then?"
"Old friend, what is this? Do you still hold to a belief in hope?"
"Do I believe in hope? I do."
"And faith?"
"And faith. Yes, I believe in faith."
Neither spoke for a time, and then Shadow Throne looked over at the hounds and cocked his head.
"Hungry, are we?"
Bestial heads lifted, eyes fixing on him.
"Don't even think it, Amirnus."
"Why not? Remind that fop on the throne who's really running this game."
"Not yet."
"Where's your impatience? Your desire for vengeance? What sort of patron of assassins are you?"
Cotillion nodded down the road.
"Leave them alone. Not here. Not now."
Shadow Throne sighed a second time.
"Misery guts!"
The shadows dissolved and a moment later were gone, leaving nothing but an empty road. The sun set, dusk closing in. He'd yet to pass any traffic on this day, and that was a little troubling, but he rode on. Having never been this way before, he almost missed the sidetrack leading down to the settlement on the shelf of land above a crescent beach, but he caught the smell of wood smoke in time to slow up his mount. The beast carefully picked its way down the narrow pass. Reaching the bottom, now in darkness, he reined in. Before him was a small fishing village, though it looked mostly abandoned. He saw a cottage nearby, stone-walled and thatch-roofed, with a stone chimney from which smoke drifted in a thin grey stream. An area of land had been cleared above and behind it, where vegetables had been planted, and working still in the growing gloom was a lone figure. Crocus dismounted, hobbled the horse outside an abandoned shack to his left, and made his way forward. It should not have taken long, yet by the time he reached the verge of the garden, the moon overhead was bright, its effervescent light glistening along her limbs, the sheen of her black hair like silk as she bent to gather up her tools. He stepped between rows of bushy plants, and she turned, watched him walk up to her. Crocus took her face in his hands, studied her dark eyes. "I never liked that story," he said.
"Which one?" she asked.
"The lover, lost on the moon, tending her garden alone."
"It's not quite like that, the story, I mean."
He shrugged. "It's what I remember from it. That and the look in your eyes when you told it to me. I was reminded of that look a moment ago."
"And now?"
"I think," he said, "the sadness just went away, Apsalar."
"I think," she replied, "you are right."
The boy watched the old man come down to the pier, as he did almost every day whenever the boy happened to be lingering along the waterfront at around this time, when the morning was stretching towards noon and all the fish were asleep. Day after day he'd seen the old man carrying that silly bucket with the rope tied to the handle for the fish he never caught, and the fishing rod in his other hand would most likely snap in half at a crab's tug. Bored, as he was every day, the boy ambled down to stand on the edge of the pier, to look out on the few ships that bothered sheltering in the harbour of Malaz City, so he could dream of the worlds beyond, where things exciting and magical happened, and heroes won the day and villains bled out in the dirt. He knew he was nobody yet, not old enough for anything, trapped here where nothing ever happened and never would. But one day he would face the whole world, and, why, they'd all know his face, they would. He glanced over to where the old man was sitting down, legs over the edge, working bait onto the hook.
"You won't never catch nothing," the boy said,
idly pulling at a rusty mooring ring.
"You sleep in too late every day."
The old man squinted at the hook, adjusted the foul-smelling bait.
"Late nights," he said.
"Where? Where you go? I know all the taverns and bars in the whole harbour district."
"Do you know?"
"All of them. Where do you drink, then?"
"Who said anything about drinking, lad? No, what I do is play."
The boy drew slightly closer.
"Play what?"
"Fiddle."
"You play at a bar?"
"I do, aye."
"Which one?"
"Smiley's."
The old man ran out the hook on its weighted line and leaned over to watch it plummet into the depths. The boy studied him suspiciously.
"I ain't no fool,"
he said. The old man glanced over, nodded.
"I can see that."
"Smiley's doesn't exist. It's just a story, a haunting. People hearing things, voices in the air, tankards clunking, laughing."
"That's all they hear in the night air, lad?"
The boy licked his suddenly dry lips.
"No, they hear fiddling, music. Sad, awful sad."
"Hey, no, not all of it's sad, though maybe that's what leaks out. But," and he grinned at the boy, "I wouldn't know that, would I?"
"You're like all the rest,"
the boy said, facing out to sea once again.
"Who are all the rest, then?"
"Making up stories and stuff, lying. It's all anybody ever does here, 'cause they got nothing else to do. They're all wasting their lives. Just like you. You won't catch any fish, ever."
And he waited to gauge the effect of his words.
"Who said I was after fish?"
the old man asked, offering up an exaggeratedly sly expression.
What, crabs? Wrong pier. It's too deep here. It just goes down and down and forever down.
Aye, and what's down there at the very bottom? You ever hear that story?
The boy was incredulous and more than a little offended.
Do I look 2 years old? That demon, the old emperor's demon. But you can't fish for it.
Why not?
Well, your rod would break. Look at it.
Looks can be deceiving, lad. Remember that.
The boy snorted. He was always getting advice.
I won't be like you, old man. I'm going to be a soldier when I grow up. I'm going to leave this place forever. A soldier fighting wars and getting rich and fighting and saving people and all that.
The old man seemed about to say one thing, stopped, and instead said,
Well, the world always needs more soldiers.
The boy counted this as a victory, the first of what he knew would be a lifetime of victories. When he was grown up and famous,
That demon bites and it'll eat you up. And even if you catch it and drag it up, how will you kill it? Nobody can kill it.
Never said anything about killing it, the old man replied. Just been a while since we last talked.
Ha! 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 Ha!
High above the harbour, the winds were brisk coming in from the sea. They struck and spun the old battered weather vane on its pole, as if the demon knew not where to turn. A sudden gust took it then, wrenched it hard around, and with a solid squeal, the weather vane jammed. The wind buffeted it, but decades of decay and rust seemed proof to its will, and the weather vane but quivered, like a thing in chains. This ends the 10th and final tale of the Malazan Book of the Fallen. And now the page before us blurs. An age is done. The book must close. We are abandoned to history. Raise high one more time the tattered standard of the fallen. See through the drifting smoke to the dark stains upon the fabric. This is the blood of our lives. This is the payment of our deeds, all soon to be forgotten. We were never what people could be. We were only what we were. Remember us. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Crippled God by Stephen Erickson, performed by Michael Page, directed by Jane Page, engineered by Jonathan Pennock. Performance copyright 2014 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.